This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 36. In this episode, we talk to Rob Howard from the Office 365 engineering team. Welcome to the Microsoft Cloud Show, the only place to stay up to date on everything going on in the Microsoft Cloud world, including Windows Azure, Office 365, SharePoint, Exchange, Link, and related technologies. Just the information, no marketing, no BS. I'm Chris Johnson.
And I'm Andrew Cole.
And we're just two dudes telling you how we see it. Welcome back to another episode of the Microsoft Cloud Show. This week's going to be a little different than some of our other episodes. Much like last week where AC was going alone and doing the episode solo and interviewing some folks on the conference circuit that he's on. This week I have the pleasure of being the solo host. So last week you had AC, this week you got me. So we've got something very interesting in store this week. I went and interviewed Rob Howard, who's a principal program manager lead on the Office 365 team. And Rob's a great guy. Rob and I met each other years ago. Wonderful, wonderful chap, and is responsible for many of the features and APIs and programming things and extensibility points and things like that in Office 365, and prior to that through SharePoint as well. And so many of the features that you've probably used or extended or programmed against and things like SharePoint, maybe front page and so forth, Rob has probably been involved with it. So I went and interviewed Rob on the Microsoft campus in Building 17, which is SharePoint Engineering used to be over in Building 16 when I was on the team. And that building is currently being internally demolished. So the team and the team that Rob's on is over in Building 17. So I wandered over there on a nice sunny Redmond day and decided to sit down and talk with Rob a little bit about what he does on the team, what he's worked on in the past. Hopefully some of you will find some of the things he's talking about familiar. You've probably programmed against them or potentially programmed against them before. And obviously Rob and his team are now working on programmability features in Office 365 that many of you will probably be aware with too. So why don't we go ahead and we will start this interview. And just a quick shout out, thank you Rob for doing this interview, and I hope you all find it very interesting indeed. All right, so I'm sitting down with Rob Howard, Principal Program Manager Lead, is that your official title?
It is.
Excellent, and so you work on Office 365?
Yep, I work on the Office Developer Platform team. We're responsible for extensibility in Office 365 and a bunch of our client products.
So all the APIs and extensibility points that all our developers listening have probably used, right?
Yep, absolutely.
Excellent, excellent. So you've been at Microsoft a little while. Give us a little bit of a background and a history on what you've done during your time here. And I'm sure there's things that people have used in the past and products that Microsoft have put out that you've worked on that they'd love to hear about. So, what's been the last few years for you?
Yeah, so I started at Microsoft almost 9 years ago, and I think I started on the front page team 2 weeks before there was no longer a front page, and then worked on SharePoint Designer immediately after. One of my first projects was actually the application templates for Windows SharePoint Services 3.0.
Nice.
Otherwise known as
the Fab 40. Yeah. Excellent. I think there's probably some of those still haunting developers out there today.
I think so. I built like half of them by hand in the days before there were editors in Visual Studio for creating feature XML. So that was
fun. Visual Notepad.
Yes, Visual Notepad, indeed. So I worked on SharePoint Designer as well and did a lot of stuff around the page editor and the client-server communication built into SharePoint Designer. And then I worked on some things in core SharePoint, things like sandbox solutions and solution templates.
Yeah.
Running code on our services in sort of safe, separate sandboxes. And then moved to the SharePoint Developer Experience team as part of the Office 2013 wave, working on the SharePoint app model and sort of the transition to having a cloud-based model.
Excellent, excellent. Well, that's a long-sorted history with SharePoint, right?
It is.
I think we met when I was on the WSS team, and I think you were still working on SPD at the time.
Yeah.
For a while there, at least, anyway, and then on to Sandbox Solutions and things.
Yep.
Oh, no doubt loads of our listeners are familiar with a few of those terms. I think, wasn't it FrontPage was originally an acquisition from Vermeer Technologies, Inc., or something like that, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right. It was called Vermeer Technologies. I think the acquisition was in, like, 97. The manager for the group when I joined worked for Vermeer when it was acquired. There's all kinds of vestiges still around. All of those service folders that are underscore VTI underscore something are all still from Vermeer Technologies Incorporated.
So. They still have their fingerprints through the product.
Yes.
It's amazing how long these sorts of things live on.
It is.
And how you run into people from acquisitions like that. I think I was talking to Dan Kogan a while back, who's from the Encompass.
Yeah.
Originally from the Encompass acquisition, which then turned into Content Management Server, obviously, and then off into SharePoint later on down the line. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, even in Building 16, where FrontPage was years ago, even until just a few weeks ago when they started gutting the building, there was still a huge Vermeer painting sitting in one of the hallways on the wall.
Wow.
Not an original, but, you know.
Yeah. I bet that's fetching a whole lot on eBay.
Right.
Maybe not. Excellent. So now you're on the you're doing things for developers in Office 365. Can you explain a little bit more about the kinds of things you look after in that space and what you're working on?
Yeah, so my team does a lot of work on the Office 365 APIs, the sort of REST APIs that work across SharePoint Online, Exchange Online, and Azure Active Directory. We work a lot on the authentication and authorization infrastructure, so the integration with Azure Active Directory so that you can register an application in the cloud, and you can get access to APIs across all of those different workloads in kind of one go, one user experience. And we work a lot on APIs for Apps for Office, the infrastructure for using JavaScript against Word, Excel, PowerPoint, documents and projects, and mails in Outlook and Anila.
Very cool. So that would be, I guess, historically would have started with like the OData REST service in SharePoint once upon a time, right? And it's kind of grown from there, and now, you know, now we have the sort of more suite-wide type APIs.
Yeah, I mean, really, you know, it all started even further back, I guess, again with Vermeer Technologies and FrontPage RPC calls were sort of the first flavor there. And then I guess it was in SharePoint 2010 when folks like Mike Amerlon and maybe you even actually you were involved in the original CSOM, right?
Yeah, for a little while there. Yeah.
And you know, sort really started making kind of remote programming against SharePoint APIs a first class thing, but at that point it was still really focused on libraries on specific platforms like .NET and JavaScript. And then in 2013, exposing that same functionality through OData in order to make really all of those same endpoints and pieces of functionality in SharePoint accessible from any platform that can make REST calls, and the sort of continued evolution and expansion of that to other services in Office 365 and across Microsoft.
Nice. Yeah, it used to be, you know, I dabbled way, way, way back in trying to program against the FrontPage RPC calls.
Yes.
And, you know, there were no wrapping sort of special libraries or, you know, SDKs to help you with it. And it sort of, it was a bunch of, it was over HTTP, which was, you know, made it a little easier, but there was sort of the pseudo XML stuff in there. And because it all kind of came about before XML really took hold in in the world. And thank goodness things have got a whole lot simpler since then.
Indeed.
Yeah. So it's, so that's sort of the more API-ish kind of endpoint level things. So, like, give us a concrete example. Today, I guess, we have the Office 365 preview APIs. Those are, you know, cover things like some file access and calendar and mail and things like that. What would you say is sort of the canonical example of something you'd use one of those APIs for?
I mean, each one of them kind of has the canonical example you can imagine, say, within files, you know, having just any program that does file storage be able to do it in the cloud so you can synchronize across that same application on different devices and in the web and have the same view of files. For calendars, there's all kinds of individual kind of productivity management solutions on getting at your right. calendar data and helping you do useful things with it. And there's similar things around mail, and people in organizational hierarchy have their own set of, you know, creating interesting views. But I think the thing that's most interesting about those APIs is not so much what you would do with each one of those individually, but the types mm-hmm. of business applications that you can enable when you go across those things. You know, right. things like being able to get at documents in your OneDrive and send those to people in an organization for review. And when that person mm-hmm. is out of the office from their OOF status in Exchange, you go and mm-hmm. find their manager in Azure Active Directory and contact them instead. You know, the really kind of high value business processes that you can build when you're not siloed into what happens to be built by one product team at Microsoft
right,
and you get sort
right.
of across those boundaries are really where the power of those APIs come from.
Yeah, I like it that it's, you know, it's one authentication system, then you go use the different APIs. You don't have to learn like the Exchange web service APIs and then the SharePoint web service or REST-based sort of endpoints, and then, you know, the equivalents for each of the different services or products, and they all used to do things slightly differently, whereas now it's kind of a nice sort of smooth model across a bunch of the constituent pieces behind the scenes of the service.
Absolutely. And, you know, the first set that we have there are in a lot of ways pretty limited. You know, you'll see the files API is a pretty basic API around just doing CRUD on files. But it's absolutely a pattern that we're really committed to adding to, both in terms of the functionality and the services that are already there, but adding more services across Office and Microsoft to the same sort of infrastructure, upping the bar in terms of the platforms we have client libraries for to make the experience even more seamless, really continuing to iterate on the tooling with the O365, with the Visual Studio team that builds the O365 API tools. That kind of kernel that we released in the preview is sort of a great start, but we definitely want to keep going as fast as we can.
Nice. Yeah, I think we've seen loads of really good feedback about the direction and the APIs, and people are obviously amping for more and all that sort of stuff, but you know, I think it's a great direction, and we're getting lots of good feedback about it. So I guess all I'd say there is keep up the good work. Okay, so changing gears a little bit, AC and I have been asking sort of in the middle of some of these shows some a little bit more less work oriented and a little more not so personal, like, you know, personal details about your life or anything, but sort of a more personal question. So I'd ask you if there were three people in the world that were alive today, or that are alive today, I should say, that you could sit down either as a group or individually and sit down for dinner with, who would they be in a quick sort of why you think they're interesting?
Oh, very cool. So, you know, with the World Cup going on, and I'm a big fan of soccer, at least playing it, and when the World Cup is around, I'm a big fan of watching it. That's definitely on my mind, and I think I've always had a bunch of admiration for Landon Donovan and thought that, you know,
wow.
the kind of contribution that he's made to soccer in the U.S. is really cool. So I think I'd love to sit down with him. And I'm a huge film geek, too, and I'm a really big fan of David Fincher.
Oh, yeah.
Who's the director who did stuff like Fight Club and recently did House of Cards, or at least the first season of it. And so I'm a huge fan of his. I'd love to sit down with him. And then, you know, I think I would love to sit down with Bill Gates, to be totally honest. I mean, I think, you know, that was his time at Microsoft was a really amazing time for the formation of computing in our industry. And I think, you know, sort of getting a direct picture of that would be pretty amazing.
Yeah, I think I picked him, too, when AC asked me the same question. Yeah, so great minds think alike. Excellent. All right, so back to a little bit more about your, I guess, things you do during the week for work. If you were to say, or if you were to summarize some of the changes you've seen over the last, I guess, sort of 2 to 3 years, you know, in the way Microsoft builds software, it's obviously been quite a transition or quite a shift from the old way Microsoft used to ship software once every 3 years, very rigorous cycle and quite a long cycle, to the way software is being shipped these days around a continuous release and virtuous cycle, so to speak, in the cloud. What are some of the sort of things that you've noticed in your time here, just in your own role, that you think really sort of illustrate the change that's going on internally here?
Yeah, I think the two biggest things for me are just the change in it being such a short cycle, to the point where the time between a developer writing the code and a customer running on top of that code has gotten so much shorter than it's ever been. And there's a few really cool things that result from that. One is that we can do things like these Office 365 API previews where we get an initial thing together and we go put that out in the service and we actually get people running on top of it, so we can start to get feedback even before we would have, say, released a full, big 3-year-long release on it. And as a result, use that feedback to make the final product even better in the end. And then when we find, by the same token, when we find issues in the product or when there's, small pieces of feedback about missing things here and there, we can also meet those needs a lot faster than we've ever been able to before. Right. So that's really just a gratifying kind of interaction to have with customers. I think the other really cool thing to me is that having a service also enables us to have so much more insight into the ways that people use our product, or the errors that they run into, or the things that they don't use, that makes so many more of the decisions that we make around how we design or what we prioritize or what things users are hitting. It makes it so much more of a data-driven decision. We can be so much more precise about saying, there's no reason to sit in a room and argue about which feature is more important. We can look at the data and see what has more usage or where we're getting more demand. There's no need for us to speculate on what are the most difficult APIs to use. We can go into the service and we can see what APIs hit the most errors and what do those errors look like. And we can go and try and address those with better designs around the APIs. And it really makes sort of this pattern of putting something out there and learning from it in really deep ways through the kind of telemetry we get from the service, and then iterating on it and making it better, it makes shipping software a much more efficient pursuit.
Right. I think it was, something I noticed in the 3-year cycle was that, you're having to make decisions that you really wouldn't fully grok the outcome or the impact it had for, up to 2 to 3 years out, right?
Yeah.
And we'd build all the stuff, and then eventually there'd be a big bang, and everybody would be like, "That's awesome," or "That sucks," or maybe a little bit of both.
Yeah.
And by the time it got into people's hands, you're 2 years through a cycle most of the time, and it was either too late to take huge pieces of feedback and modify the way APIs were built or what have you, and so now it's a whole lot of less shooting in the dark, whereas you say looking at the data is, can prove one way or another what people are doing and how they like it and so forth. So
yeah,
it must make designing a whole lot easier.
Yeah, in some ways it makes it a lot easier because there's a lot less of this sort of arguing based on people's intuitions and guesses. We don't have to spend time saying, "Well, I like this color better," or "I like this color better." Or, you can actually point at some data. In other ways, it makes it more complex because actually going through and finding the right insights from that data is a whole new sort of skill that we have to develop as software engineers. And that's been really exciting, but also that's been a whole new challenge for us. So, it's definitely been a very different way of working, and one of my favorite parts about working in the service and in the cloud. So.
Yeah, no, that's certainly a hell of a change for Microsoft. The whole company was releasing it roughly 3 years, and now you're going down to things on a monthly basis or even a weekly basis. And
yeah, and when it's if there's a critical customer issue, it's a daily basis even.
Right,
so it's really fast.
Yeah, no, excellent. Okay, so that's interesting. So that's those are some of the things you've seen, I guess, happen in the areas of Microsoft that you've been directly working on. What about outside of Microsoft? Like what do you think's going on in the cloud world right now that you personally are really interested in, you think that either Microsoft could learn from or are even doing, doing themselves, but just kinds of the things that you think are really interesting going on in the world out there right now?
Yeah, I think for me, there's a couple of really interesting ones. One of them is, this trend toward much more open platforms and connectivity in the cloud, you know, the prevalence of things like OAuth and open REST APIs that really make building applications that cross these boundaries, not just between products at the same company, but even across companies, across geographies, across scenarios and businesses, making something new out of these component parts, I think is really, really exciting. And stuff like OAuth and Open REST APIs are really what powers that and makes it possible for developers to go and do that work. And I think the other thing is that there's just so much power and so much value in the cloud services today. There's so many examples where, for example, if you look at cloud storage, the amount of storage that you can get in the cloud and the cost of that storage in the cloud just keeps plummeting. And as both consumers and developers, it means that, you're getting more and more value out of the services that you're leveraging and can build more and more capable applications, take more advantage from what's out there. And the pace just seems to be getting quicker and quicker in terms of not just the sort of commodity things about like how many gigabytes do you get out of storage, but the really kind of cool value added services you get when you use that storage and the way that it connects with things. If you look at companies like Ift and the sort of integration that they do between services, you put something in one service or you find something in one service and you make a change in another service and connect things in that way. Getting that sort of value on all of these services across the cloud is really, really exciting. And just something that while maybe possible, was never really going to reach critical mass when everybody's servers are behind firewalls and they're sort of corporate internal and only facing their own employees. So.
Yeah, that stuff is, it seems to me like the real sort of sea change has been barrier to entry for adoption of some of these services, right? Whereas in the past, when you've had loads of things, like you say, tied up behind firewalls and stuff, the barrier to entry of adding these really capable servers or products and things behind the firewall was really hard, right? You had to go get your node department, your IT department to go buy servers and manage them and learn them and procure all the software and then do this huge project for getting things set up. And now it's more a matter of going and signing up on a web page and, a minute later you've got unlimited storage in the cloud. And then being able to glue all the bits together with these sort of interesting solutions in the cloud like Ift and Zapier and things like that.
Yeah.
Hey, so Zapier are using your APIs, I hear, as well.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. They're doing some really cool stuff with it. They have a whole bunch of really cool scenarios connecting, especially around, a lot of really interesting productivity scenarios. That same kind of stuff I was talking about with the Office 365 APIs, like, going from working on a document to looking at people's calendars and really crossing the boundaries between the different types of workloads that make businesses move. They have a bunch of different really interesting channels there, and the ones for Office 365 we're obviously a big fan of.
Nice. Well, we'll link off to I'll be sure to put a link off in the show notes to the blog post that Zapier did recently about their experience with integrating with the Office 365 APIs and things as well.
Yeah.
So I'm going to throw you a little bit of a curveball. I didn't tell you about this question before we sat down to record, but we've asked a couple of people this in the past. And if there's one thing you could go back and change about SharePoint in the past that you wish it was different now, or had you known then what you know now, what would you go back and change and why?
Oh, man.
I mean, the list is probably long, but just the top of
just
it.
One thing?
Just the one.
I guess if you're going to make me pick one, man, there's
it's just like picking a favorite child.
It is a bit like picking a favorite child. I guess sandbox solutions. I think we've learned a lot around. So when you think about sandbox solutions, really what we were trying to do with sandbox solutions was to allow people in places like Office 365, in this sort of shared cloud infrastructure, even not in Office 365, but in their own sort of corporate environments where they're sharing it across a bunch of business units. We wanted to really lower the barrier for people to be able to write code and get at the functionality of SharePoint. And I think that that sort of goal and that mission really across Office 365 and Microsoft Services is absolutely still at the heart of what we do. But I think we learned a lot from that approach about how to do it. And I think in particular, the thing that was wrong with Sandbox Solutions was that it was really kind of creating our own little web server platform in a very tight box.
Yeah,
It meant that you were really running not on an IIS server, not on ASP.NET. You were running in this sandbox box.
Yeah.
And as a result, you couldn't really take advantage of all the interesting capabilities of the platform, and we had to really lock down what you could do inside that box in order to be able to guarantee its safety. And even we, I'm sure that had we really continued to invest in there, we could have improved the capabilities to make it more capable, to make you be able to do more. But really, the best we ever could have done, even extending the functionality to everything, would be to be as good as something like Azure Websites, as good as something like Cloud Host on Amazon. And really, the idea behind the Cloud Out model was to kind of go back and say, look, That idea of being able to enable people to write that custom code and get it all the great functionality that's there in Office 365 is a really valid idea. But we should really focus on letting people pick the platform that they want, get it the full value of whatever the platform they're going to run on is, and still take advantage of that functionality. And so it was a different way of thinking about it. So I guess that's my my thing that I would go back and do differently if we were to do it over again.
No, I think that's I think that's totally fair. It was an interesting timing, right? Because it was when Sandbox Solutions were envisaged, were off definitely trying to solve a particular problem that even existed on-prem in the cloud, really wasn't even taking off at that point. I mean, it was just a sort of a very early stage thing.
Right.
And now we've got much better platforms for running this code. So so things like Azure and the app model and provider-hosted apps and things like that really try to solve that same problem at the end of the day, I guess.
Right.
Hey, well, so you helped design it originally. Now you get to go help create something better, right? So
absolutely. That's a good spot to be in.
That's a good way to approach it. Yeah, I like that. Hey, well, thank you very much for sitting down and answering my questions, even the curveball I didn't brief you on at the end.
Of course.
And I hope everybody's found this super interesting. Thank you, Rob, and I look forward to talking again at some stage.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Cheers.
Take care.
If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or MP3 and provide a link so we can play your question on the show. You can subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find a full transcript and show notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.